Epilogue. To cut a long story short, we won. It feels very different when you watch a replay of a body tumbling off a cliff in freefall toward the harsh ground so far below, and it's not your body, and there are no second chances. In the years since Sonny and I, and the rest of our ragtag resistance network, kicked the door shut and overturned Jordan's pocket dictatorship, I've watched the videotape of Sam's death many times. How he sapped me, then gently laid me out on the floor, grunting with effort as he rolled me into the recovery position so I wouldn't choke on my own vomit. How he straightened up painfully afterward and put his gun down. How he walked along the row of short jump doors, looking for the one opening on the short metal corridor with the handrail and the ring of support nodes halfway along it. How he paused and went back to move me so that I wasn't lined up with it. And then how he stepped through. What does it take to step into a corridor, knowing that your enemy said there's a laser fence halfway along it? And as if that isn't enough, to do so wearing a waistcoat with 10 kilos of plastic explosives weighing down its pockets. Sam gets halfway along the corridor. There's a momentary flash, then the door bulges and turns black as the T-gate does a scram shutdown and ejects its wormhole endpoint through the side of the pod. It's not very dramatic. And that's how we reach the foot of the cliff. While I was unconscious, Janice and her team did what was expected of them. I think that she was expecting betrayal all along because she had a few surprises of her own. Jordan, at the front of the hall, chopped her in half with his vorpal blade. I can only imagine his shock when another Janice stepped out from behind the fire escape and blew a hole through his chest. I should have realized she was playing a tricky game. Her excuse about taking all night to run off 10 kilos of high explosives was far too convenient. But in hindsight, she didn't trust anyone by that point, even me. While I was unconscious, Fiore, desperate, trapped in the police station down the road by a squad of murderous Sonnies, patched through his netlink and got onto our command circuit, which was, as expected, compromised by design. But Sonny was one jump ahead of him all the way. Greg had told him what was going on that morning. Fiore thought that a laser fence and extra security guards would suffice. These Psywar types, they don't think like a tank or a fighting cat. Two of me, despite being seriously pissed at Sonny for making them live in the library attic and stay away from Sam, took him out with a rocket-propelled grenade, while three other squads fanned out and combed the parish churches for cowering revenants. As Janice later explained, when the only soldier you can rely on is Reeve, you make the most of her. But I won't bear a grudge, even though two of me died. Because when the dust stopped raining down on the cowering cohorts in the auditorium, while our other instances raced through the administration block and the hospital, frantically hunting down assemblers and deleting their pattern buffers before another Jordan or Fiore could ooze out of them, it was Janice who stepped up to the lectern and fired a shot into the ceiling and called for silence.
Friends, she said, a faint tremor in her voice. Friends, the experiment is over. The prison is closed. Welcome back to the real world.
That all happened years ago. The river of history waits for nobody. We live our lives in the wake of vast events, accommodating ourselves to their shapes. Even those of us who contributed to the events in question. Maybe the oddest thing is how little has changed since we overthrew the Scorefile dictatorship. We still have regular town meetings. We still live in small family groups as orthohumans. Many of us even stayed with the spousal units we were assigned by Fiore or Jordan. We dress like it's still the Dark Ages, and we hold jobs just like before, and we even have babies the primitive way, sometimes. But we vote in the town meetings. There are no Scorefile metrics with hidden point tables that some smug researcher can tweak in order to make the parishioners jump. We don't dance like puppets for anyone, even our elected mayor. We may live in families as orthohumans, but we've got an assembler in every home. Mostly, we don't want to be neomorphs. Many of us spent too much time as living weapons during the war. We do have, and enthusiastically use, modern medical technology with agates everywhere. The costumery and lifestyle upholstery is harder to explain, but I put it down to social inertia. I saw a blue hermaphrodite centaur in a chainmail hauberk and no pants in the shopping mall the other day. And guess what? Nobody raised an eyebrow. We're a tolerant town these days. We have to be. There's nowhere else to go until we arrive wherever the harvest lore is carrying us. As for me, I don't have to fight anymore. I've got the best of my surrendered self's wishes without any of the drawbacks, and I've been so lucky that thinking about it makes me want to cry. I have a daughter. Her name's Andy, short for Andromeda. She swears she wants to be a boy when she grows up. She isn't going to hit puberty for another 6 years, and she may change her mind when her body starts changing. The important thing is we live in a society where she can be whatever she wants. She looks like a random phenotypic cross between Reeve and Sam, and sometimes when I see her in the right light, just catching her profile, my breath catches in my throat as I see him diving off that cliff. Did he know I was already pregnant when he carefully made sure I was out of harm's way, then jumped? It shouldn't be possible, but sometimes I wonder if he suspected. Andromeda was delivered, surprise, in the hospital, by the nice Dr. Hanta, who no longer needs a gun pointing at her head all day long, since Sani gave her a choice between reprogramming herself to let her patients define their own best interests or joining Jordan and Fiore. After going through with the birth, I went back to being Robin, or as close to the original Robin as our medical wear could come up with. Natural childbirth is an experience all fathers should go through, at least once in their lives, as adults, I mean. But I needed to be Robin again, the only version of me that doesn't come with innocent blood on his hands. It's late now, and Andy is sleeping upstairs. I've been writing this account down longhand on paper to help fix these events in my memory, like the letter someone wrote to me so long ago that I can barely remember what it was like to be him. Even without memory surgery, we are fragile beings. Lights in the darkness that leave a trail fading out behind us as we forget who we have been. I don't actually want to remember much about what I was before the war. I'm comfortable here, and I expect to live here for a long time to come, longer than my entire troubled life to this point. If all I remember of the first half of my life is a thick pile of paper and Sam's conflicted love for me, that will be enough. But there's a difference between not remembering and deliberately forgetting. Hence the stack of paper. One last thought. My wife is dozing on the sofa across the room. I have a question for her, which I'll wake her up for. What do you think Sam was thinking when he walked down that tunnel? Oh, that's useful. She yawns and says,
I wouldn't know, I wasn't there.
But if you had to guess,
I'd say he was hoping for a second chance.
Is that all? She stands up.
Sometimes the truth is boring, Robin. Go on, put that in your memoir.
Okay. Any other comments before I finish up here? I'm going to bed in a minute.
Let me think.
Kay shrugs, an incredibly fluid gesture that involves four shoulder joints.
No. Don't be long.
She smiles lazily and heads for the staircase, swinging her hips in a way that suggests she's got something other than sleep in mind. She's been a lot happier since she stopped being Sam, which she did very shortly after the panicky last-minute backup in the library basement. And so, you may be assured, am I. Good night.
The end. You've been listening to Glass House by Charles Stross, narrated by Kevin R. Free. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Sci-Fi Audio recommends Halting State, also by Charles Stross, narrated by Robert Ian McKenzie. In the year 2018, Sergeant Sue Smith of the Edinburgh Constabulary is called in on a special case. A daring bank robbery has taken place at Hayek Associates, a dot-com startup company that's just been floated on the London Stock Exchange. But this crime may be a bit beyond Smith's expertise, as the prime suspects are a band of marauding orcs with a dragon in tow for fire support. The robbed bank is located within the virtual reality land of Avalon 4, and the robbery was supposed to be impossible. When word gets out, Hayek Associates and all its virtual economies are going to crash hard. For Smith, the investigation seems pointless. But the deeper she digs, the bigger the case gets. There are powerful players, both real and pixelated, who are watching her every move, because there is far more at stake than just some game head's fantasy financial security. You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalog, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. Call us toll-free or log on to recordedbooks.com to learn about our latest releases and special offers, order another recorded book, or to read author interviews and narrator profiles. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.